The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at Camp Margaritaville LanierIslands.com.
Na 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 na. Chuck and Chernoff. Yeah. Na 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 na. Chuck and Chernoff. It's 3 o'clock on the dot. Hey, you know what that means. It's time for Matt, Lana, and the King. Woo! Na 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 na. It's Chuck and Chernoff. Na 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 na. Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan.
The second part, yo.
Traffic jam. But we got Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Woo! Na 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 na. It's Chuck and Chernoff. Na 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 na. It's Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan. Yeah.
He's free from the elevator. I don't know if you guys heard that story. Get to that in a moment. Chuck and Chernoff, happy Monday. Post-draft recap weekend. We will go through every pick of the entire NFL draft with grades associated each pick. Then we'll go team by team. And if we're not done by six, we'll stay. Just how that one's going to go. We get it rolling in our 3 o'clock hour of this mediocre radio show. And it's all presented by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most out of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters, the podcast at thisstuffmatters.net. Why don't we start the festivities by saying hello to Charles?
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Chuck.
Can I mention something out of left field?
Go for it.
Honey, I may cheat on you tonight. I don't know. That blonde's pretty hot, but it may not.
Giving advance notice actually helps, I think.
Sorry. Not sorry.
What if she signs off on it? Go have a good time, just don't fall in love. Is that a possibility?
Well, now you got to actually follow through. You got to prove yourself.
You have an understanding that you do you, I do me, we do each other, we do other people. It's a thing.
CJ, dinner on Friday night, it'll be fine.
That's exactly right. So before we get into Braves and draft, Kevin McAlpin had a harrowing experience over the weekend. Do you know about this?
I don't.
He got stuck in one of the elevators here inside of our building for, I guess, an extended period of time with his son, Max, who was turning 9. And apparently young Max McAlpin didn't handle it very well.
Wait, what the hell?
As you would imagine, most 9-year-olds will melt down being stuck in an elevator for any period of time.
How long was he in there? Do you know the period of time?
I heard he missed the beginning of the pregame show. Cullen, do you know more on this?
I know nothing about this, weirdly.
It's a true story. He got stuck in the elevator. There were pictures he posted on social media of little Max sitting in the corner.
I will only tell the truth. We've been in this building 7 years. The elevators are sketchy.
Los got stuck in it like a month or two ago, too.
They're sketchy.
Really?
Sketchy.
Okay. So maybe K-Mac will give
relatively
us details
new.
Later.
Sketch. Yeah,
you would think we would have better situations there. All right, we'll get to the draft stuff coming up in a moment. But first, we start with your red-hot Braves, who won another series. They beat Cleveland 4-3 yesterday in 10 innings. They avoid their first two-game losing streak of the season. Oh, imagine social media had they lost two in a row. But the Braves improved to 19-7. They have that record in the midst of a time where Acuna, Olsen, and Riley just continue to struggle, reminding you how deep and talented this roster is. Now, heading into Sunday's game, Acuna was 4 for his last 24. Riley, 2 for his last 22. Olsen, 2 for his last 21. But good news for you, Charles. They showed signs of life. Acuna, Ryles, and Olsen combined for four hits yesterday, a couple of ribs, a run scored, a stolen base, and then Ronald scored the game-winning run on the Austin Riley base hit. So the scary thing for everybody else is, what if your best players actually look like your best players?
Yeah, it's supposed to be a bigger deal. And if the record were different, I don't know, they were 12-14. Mm-hmm. It'd be torches and pitchforks out there, but they're overcoming. A lot of different reasons for it, but when you got the best record in the game, you just took 2 out of 3 from the second place for record. That's a great weekend, man.
But I would add this. At 12-14, we would go, makes sense. Don't like it. Makes sense. And I would still say this to you guys, I promise.
Yeah, Braves fans aren't used to seeing 12-14.
No, but what I would say to you is, they'll get it right. They'll straighten it out. Like, the record doesn't change my opinion on the three guys. Being 12-14 would be more understandable, given your three best offensive players are struggling.
When I say the emotional response from the fans, there would be a lot more. Matt Olson, what in the world? Sure. How do you go from 50? Was it 54?
It's still there, though, even with a 19-7 record. Not to the same noise level it would be. Maybe a couple of things from this weekend. Maybe we're back to a dead ball era, or the wind was just doing stuff I haven't seen before. Matt Olson hit a ball that is out any other time. Austin hit one. Ozuna hit one. These balls died at the warning track in a way that, okay, they said it was the wind. I wasn't in the building. We'll ask Tom Glavine when he joins us. He was calling the games for Bally.
Tommy!
Like, that had a dead ball look to it. Because there was one that Riley hit where Chucky's coming up the first baseline, just threw his hands up. He's like, I can't believe that didn't get out. It went off the bat at like 111. It was murdered, and it just didn't even get to the wall. It died. That looked like dead ball to me.
Yeah, so I don't know. I was thinking weather. I was thinking wind.
Well, they said wind.
But Riley is not one who doesn't out-muscle anything.
No. So. The starting pitching this weekend. So Bryce was not close to sharp yesterday, but give him credit. He kept the Braves in the thing. He pitched 5 1/3, gave up a couple of runs, but he walked 4. He hit a batter, had 2 wild pitches.
Traffic again.
They were lucky that it was still close. What Morton and Sale did, continued a streak of at least 7 inning starts by Braves pitchers over the last 5. Morton was dialed in Saturday night. He went 7, no runs, 6 Ks. Sale was awesome on Friday night. 7 innings, 2 hits, a run, and 6 Ks. So those two, knock on wood, they stay healthy. They are doing everything more you could ever ask of any two veterans in the middle of this rotation.
Yeah, and Atlanta could have lost yesterday, and that would have been completely understandable. Cleveland ran themselves. That's some interesting base running, but Braves get 2 out of 3. Take it.
Sale has now pitched 7 innings and 3 consecutive starts. First time he's done that since 2018. So right now, when it's early, it's April, Alex looks pretty smart. Now, Alex won't win Executive of the Year anymore. He's just, they're too good. But when you add up if Lopez and Sale, they won't be this all year. But if they're like huge parts of this, he should be up for Executive of the Year again. He just won't get it because they have too much talent. Tonight, Max Fried will get the ball against Bryce Miller in game 1 of this series in Seattle. 9:40 first pitch is tough. I'm not going to lie to you. That's rough. That's asking a lot. West Coast baseball's for the birds. Thank God it's not L.A., but this is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I need one of these 2-hour and 13-minute games. That's what I'm asking for tonight. A little 2-1, clean. Max goes 7, hand it off to like Minter and then Rysell, and we go to bed.
We will miss Logan Gilbert if you care about that.
Who?
That's not nothing.
Who is he?
He's a really good pitcher for them.
Oh.
He could win the Cy Young this year.
Who is he?
Logan Gilbert? Right. I don't know.
I just learned about – I was this many days old when I learned about Logan Gilbert. I like it. Tomorrow night, Ronaldo Lopez against Luis Castillo. And then Wednesday afternoon, weather could be a little sketchy there in Seattle, so we'll be on standby just in case the afternoon game with Chris Sale against Emerson Hancock gets rained out. So just know, management, we are here for you if there's a weather problem Wednesday afternoon for that day game in Seattle.
Pause. All right, that's a clean edit. Good. That.
Yeah. So, and for the locker room, I'll say that too. We will be here in studio ready if the Braves go to a rain delay in Seattle. You just never know. Roof could leak. Could be a tornado. Sort of a
stuff and things.
Natural disaster. It could be awful. All right, let's get to the football. The Falcons draft is now complete. And in some people's eyes, it was a complete mess. My response, I have no idea. I sit here today and tell you I have no clue from rounds 2 to 7, what it's going to look like, but I will hope. I will hope for the best, but also it's the Falcons, so I always am jarred to expect the worst. Now, I will not give you grades. Chuck will do that. He's a big grader of the draft.
Yes, huge.
Instead, I will give you Warren Sharp's draft value chart. So what Warren Sharp of Sharp Analytics did, he rated every team in the league from best value to worst value. And all this is just based on sheer opinion. He takes the first round based on the mocks and then rounds 2 through 7 over 100 big boards. Just compares all the big boards of people he trusts. And that's how he comes up with, did you get the guy overvalued, undervalued, or just about right?
Yeah, based on where your pick was.
Right. So the Falcons, let me start with the good. I don't want to start with the bad. The good. The number one team in the draft is the team that hosted the draft. That would be the Detroit Lions. They had the best value draft of them all. The team at number 32 with the worst value draft, your Atlanta Falcons. Doesn't mean it has to be right, but just based on his value ranking system, the Falcons, I'll use the draft terms, reached, overdrafted, didn't get the value they should have in some of the guys involved. Now, the most interesting part of what Warren Sharp writes is the Falcons board looked wildly different than all 31 other teams. Could be great for them. They could see something that nobody else sees. But typically when that happens, there's something that you're trying to show that you have a little edge on everybody else, and it doesn't work out that way. That part of it scares me, that they viewed guys so wildly different. This is what I tell you all the time. When they sell me on their best player available, their best player available doesn't look anything like a lot of other teams.
Then it reverts back to, okay, how well do you evaluate? It's shocking to me that going into this draft, I don't think it's universally accepted. Probably their two biggest needs. They had to improve pass rush, and they need a starting cornerback. They drafted an outside linebacker in the third round. They didn't take any cornerback ever.
They said they said they do. They had the knee. They said they never had anything there that they liked. Now they'll go back into the free agent market and try to fill it.
So those were their two biggest needs. They didn't swing at all on corner. And the outside linebacker is there's a chance there, but it's not certainly anything, for instance, what would have been available at 8 or even 43, which became 35.
Well, what became,
which cost you the second, third round pick.
All right, so let's go there. So the Falcons trade up from 43 to 35, giving up their second of their third round picks. They got a sixth back in the deal. I can only go by what I'm hearing people say, that Rook Arororo, God, I love that name. He was somewhere on boards in the 70 to 75 range on a lot of different people's big board. Doesn't mean the Falcons looks anything like theirs, but I'm just giving you a little bit of context.
After 43, by the way.
So they not only took him at 43, they moved up to 35 and gave a pick to get Rook. Here's Andre Rison, Falcon legend, reading the pick to introduce you to Rook.
With that 35th pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Rook Arororo. Arororo.
Bad moon. Gave it a shot.
Now, you get that card if you're Andre and you're thinking, I hope they draft Bill Smith. How great would it be if they draft, John Wilson?
J.D. Bertrand.
Something that is not Rook.
Casey Washington.
Rook, pause.
Arororo.
But the best is, he was, so scared once he saw Rook, and then, oh, my God. Now, do you think they put it phonetically for these guys? Because I'm thinking no. That's a mistake on the NFL's part. Like, I don't know. Is Arororo, would that just be, how would you do Arororo?
Andre wouldn't have processed it. No one would process that quickly either.
This poor kid growing up at school must have been rough.
No, he's Rook.
I mean.
What's up, Rook?
When they took roll the first day.
Carry your bags, Rook.
But how about when his teacher took roll in sixth grade? They can't,
Arororo.
He's not here. He just flies in for the games.
My goodness. So in the third round, with the remaining third round pick the Falcons had, they got Braylon Trice, who is a pass rusher and a former teammate of Michael Penix from Washington. If you're looking for a good number, I'll give you a good number. He has the most pressures in college football since 2022, 149 of them. He was recruited by Jimmy Lake. Dane Brugler had him as 10th rated edge rusher, so maybe you got some value with Braylon Trice there. Then in the fourth round, the Falcons came back with another DL with Brandon Dorlus from Oregon. Fifth round, Chuck mentioned J.D. Bertrand from Notre Dame. He's a linebacker who led the Irish in tackles. Each of the last 3 years, he's also an Alpharetta native. He went to Blessed Trinity. He likes Moe's and he likes to dance. No, I don't know anything
else
about
him. And he's a Captain America fan.
Yeah, pound baby. Sixth round, we got to get a running back in every draft. That's part of the rule around here. Falcons took Chase McClellan, the Bama running back, and then they finished up the next two picks. Casey Washington, Illinois wide receiver, and they went big dog. Zion Logue, is the Falcons took a Georgia product in the sixth round, but it doesn't count because it's the sixth round. We have rules. It goes from they don't take dogs to they don't take dogs until later in the draft.
Jace McClellan, if you're wondering, does Tyler Algier feel put upon? No, running backs, they play running back. They also cover kicks a lot. So he'll make the roster as a special teams guy because he's a tough, tough dude.
And they need a third back who's cheap. Right,
that'll be Jace McClellan.
That'll be Jace. He'll play special teams.
He'll make $512,000.
And they also said he could play all three downs if you needed to.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'll get a carry here and there. This is the spot that was left open by CP and the Falcons moving on because Arthur's got to take CP with him. Wait, where did CP? Did he go to Pittsburgh? Was that a thing that happened? I thought my memory worked out that way. So that spot is available. Now, one thing that is clear, the Falcons valued size, and I don't mean weight, up front of the defensive line. They drafted a group that could play in the backcourt in the NBA. Rook Arororo is 6'4". Braylon Trice is 6'3.5". Brandon Dorlus is 6'3". And Zion Logue is 6'6". So you got a basketball team. Raheem said, I watched all their pressers this weekend. It's as simple as, and we're not going to overthink this, is length equals less missed tackle opportunity. That's what the data and video and everything has shown us through the years. More length gives you a better chance to, if you miss the first attempt to try to get a guy on the ground, you have less missed tackles. Okay. That works for me. I'm good with that. And then I watched, I'm trying to remember which presser now, because they were trying to start, maybe it was the Saturday presser, and your guy D-Led.
My guy.
He wanted to get an exact, like a long jump or a high jump or some kind of number on some player. So now you got to stop the presser before it starts. Raheem snaps at him. Let Terry make his opening statement.
Oh.
Not in a mean way, but... And now Led's, like, slowed the whole process down. So whoever's running the feed has to turn the feed down because now Terry's hopping on his phone.
So, like, he's at the front of the line at Publix, but he put his card in, like, the chip's still outside, so he has to turn it around.
And then
he's got 14 items.
Raheem got loopy at the end of the presser. And Terry even made a mention of it. It was, like, 40 minutes into the third press conference in 3 days, and Raheem was just babbling. Just like,
there were times that Terry's not freewheeling and comfortable. Raheem is. Raheem will just get on a roll and just words connected to each other or not, but words will just start flying out of his mouth. That is not Terry. Terry likes to wrap things up and, like, get the train back on the tracks.
The other thing I noticed on Saturday, the first question looked like it was directed for Terry, but Raheem popped in. Didn't feel collaborative. I'm not saying loggerheads. It just felt like it was a GM question. Raheem's like, I got this, Terry. Okay, I'm new sheriff in
town. I selected Michael Penix. I'll go ahead and field this one.
All the defensive moves feel like Raheem, right? Maybe the Penix thing was a collaborative, but this feels like the way Terry was with Arthur's, like Arthur Smith wanted this and this. Terry's like, okay.
Yep.
And now it's Raheem. He's like, you get this and this. And that's how the process sounds like it works.
Get ready for Chuck and Chernoff's worst idea.
All righty, then we'll take your worst idea answers at the Harrah's Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. The appropriate question today, the name you constantly mess up. Because I imagine Rook Arororo. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. I apologize to the Arororo family if I'm butchering it.
Arororo.
I don't think Dre hit it either. I don't think. Derek Thomas, you feel like you have a good handle on the name?
Well, some what they say, yes, it's like row, row, row your boat. It's Rook Arororo.
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 Still doesn't sound
it sounds like I'm saying the same thing you're saying. I'm hearing WNBC. I'm saying
Arororo. No, you're just not getting it, Matt. It's Arororo.
Arororo.
Yeah, you're close, but.
It feels like I'm saying the same thing, and it's not coming out that way. I will give you one that it wasn't even I butchered his real name. There must have been times when I called Tevin Coleman, Tevin Campbell, 311 times after they drafted him. So I'd be doing my spiel, and I'd mention something about Tevin. I'd look around the room, and these idiots are all, like, judging me because I called him Tevin Campbell for the 30th time.
And they're laughing at you.
Yeah.
The kid at Tennessee is Nico. That's
Try
the quarterback. It's Nico Amalavea. No, that's not right. That's close. And then is a big, giant defensive tackle out of Ohio State who may be the Falcons take next year, JT.
Give it a shot.
Not really certain about his last name.
Okay, so while we're at it, then I'll
Tiamalo?
That's better than I would have done.
Tuamalo? He's been there 3 years. He's an All-American. I have no idea how to say his name. I call him JT. So does everybody else, by the way. He's good with it.
The former Clemson quarterback became DJU because I was scared. I was so scared of Ungalelele or whatever it was. I was so frightened.
Oh, yeah. He's Dave Jr.
Yeah.
You know, his father is Big Dave.
Fine. I was so scared
Big
of the
Dave
name.
Dave and Dave Jr.
I would run away from that. The way I would run away from Tagovailoa, which I still don't know if I got that right.
Instead, nobody called him his last name. It was Big Dave.
Yeah. DT, what you got?
Oh, gosh. I got a whole list.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, every day in the updates.
Yeah, pretty much.
720,
there you go.
First page.
First pitch.
All right, what do you got? Fan app.
Oh, sorry. Rory McIlroy, Spencer Strider, Reggie Bush. Oh.
Okay. Derek.
680, 93 seats.
You're doing great. Brian Gephardt, one of the fine producers of the program.
I went with more of like a proper noun sort of a situation. I still call like the LA Rams San Diego all the time. Or excuse me, the Chargers.
We got to move this along. Colin Madden,
you're going to hate mine if you didn't like theirs. Huh. You call me Dill instead of Cole.
I did. When we first got you on the board, I called you Colin and Dylan and Dilly. It was a bad job. Listen, in my memory, I'm lucky if I know my kids anymore. You guys will send your answers to the Harris Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed, the name you constantly mess up. We don't mess up Tom Glavin's name.
Tom Glavin. You're like, hey, they got a Hall of Famer. Some association with a Hall of Famer. Like, I don't know what it does for Tom.
Way to sell it, Chuck. He'll join us in less than 15 minutes to talk about the Braves' big pitching weekend. Plus, this sinister reaction to the Falcons' first-round pick should not be completely ignored.
They should be shot.
That seems a little over the top. But who knows, maybe. We'll give you the real opinion next. It's my favorite show of the year. It's the Monday post-draft show, meaning we get to grade every player and every team in the draft, just throwing out A's and B's and C's and D's all the way around. Chuck and Chernoff are on the Fan, which means we're doing it on FM at 93.7. We're trying it again on AM, and we're definitely streaming on our 680 The Fan mobile app.
Steaming on the Fan app.
Close enough. The 3 o'clock hour of our show is presented by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most out of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters, the podcast at thisstuffmatters.net. The Hall of Famer, Tom Glavin, is 5 minutes away. We'll talk to Tom about Chris Sale's continued performances, how good they've been. Same thing with Charlie Morton. Tom was in the booth this weekend, so we got to see that up close and personal. And the Braves have the guy who's tied for the league lead in wins right now in the National League. Anybody know who that is? I'll share it with you with Glav because I bet it'll tick him off. We'll do that coming up. But first, we know the Falcons have dealt with all kinds of negativity and confusion, really, over their decision to take a quarterback at 8. And I have to say it that way, take a quarterback. Very little of this has been pointed at Michael Penix because there's either an unknown about Penix or I think he's really good.
No, we're not angry at the kid. We're angry at the adult.
Yeah. So the anger or confusion that has come from the media or a lot of fans is the process of $100 million for Kirk. 40 days later, you take the quarterback at number 8. I can listen to your talk about succession plans all the time, but I would rather listen to it with a bridge quarterback where I could spread that $100 million out to other things. So we talked about all that process on Friday. But here's one I'm going to play you, Chuck. This reaction comes from Ross Tucker, former NFL player, who is a big to-do in the media now. His opinion paints a picture of Raheem and Terry as a little more sinister in their decision to draft a quarterback. Take a listen to Ross Tucker.
When in doubt in the NFL, always think job security and job preservation. That's my initial reaction to the Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr. 8th overall. This gives the GM Terry Fontenot, the head coach Raheem Morris, a pretty long runway to keep their jobs in Atlanta.
Yes and no. Yes on Raheem. Terry's different.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to have another 7-10, I don't know. I know Arthur, I've said this many times. He's always given a lot more, and I'll use the term that Ross just used there. He's always given more runway to executives. He just always has. That's why Rich McKay has never lost a job. He's been moved to different parts of the building. It's why Thomas kept the job after Mike Smith was fired. It's why Terry kept the job after Arthur Smith was fired. So he's always given them more of a runway. Maybe he would get another year, but I wouldn't guarantee it. But I would say about Raheem, when you have the bridge quarterback who's making $100 million, and if you do an okay job, you can always hold out to, well, we got the next guy in the pipeline, and we kind of knew that. It does give the head coach some more job security. I don't disagree with that at all.
Yeah, scary Terry, this is kind of on him now. Coach Arthur's gone, and it was two of y'all, and so who was more? Well, apparently Coach Arthur, and he's out, and Coach Arthur just had all the bad moments on Sundays anyway. But this is Terry Fontenot's kind of his baby now, and I will say, ultimately, if the owner wants it pink, it's pink. All right, it doesn't matter. Whatever an owner wants. Now, okay, how often is the owner involved? My opinion is Terry doesn't answer to anybody. Now, after this draft, I'm wondering about he and Raheem and making calls and whatever, but understand, Terry doesn't answer to scouts. Terry doesn't answer to assistant coaches. Terry doesn't answer to personnel men. It's owner Terry. So this is in his lap. Win, lose, dead or buried.
All right, let me play you one more from Ross Tucker, who, and this has been a prevailing thought from me and a lot of other people, of at some point you got to pick a lane, and it feels like the Falcons are sort of hedging with both these quarterback decisions.
Those guys, the Falcons management, probably just bought themselves at least 4 years, maybe 5 years, which is an eternity in the NFL. They had a chance with this eighth pick to either select a player or trade down and really cement themselves as the NFC South favorites, and maybe even a contender in the NFC. They elected not to do that because I think they're very worried about job security and the future.
Now, I don't know about that, but what I do know is the Falcons' decisions this offseason have been confusing enough to make me believe they're okay with being okay. Because, Chuck, I said this to you the day they signed Kirk. I'm like, oh, they're going to go all in now. Whatever all in looks like, I said they're going to get a little borderline reckless with the cap. They're going to sign a bunch of guys. They're going to make it. We're going to give a 2-year window to give Kirk everything he needs to at least
26. Come up, Mac.
Yeah, we're going to go for it. But instead, they signed Kirk and then backed off. They made the Mooney signing, which is fine. They traded for Rondell Moore. They've done nothing of note defensively. And now they don't take a first round pick who can help you for 2 years. So even if I trust that their succession plan was in the front of their mind, fine. You're just admitting that if we win 8 or 9, we'll kind of get you through this year. We'll kind of get through next year. And then with Penix, then we'll go for it. Well, you have to show me you'll go for it then. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I'm not trying. This is not just a thin layer of distinction here. This really matters because it's organizational approach. I'm of the opinion now it was enough for them to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Get good or slash great, that's different. That's a different pursuit. I think it was enough with the Cousin signing for them to get better. Then we got better.
We hope. Because I'll remind the audience for the 50th time, Kirk's numbers are always great. Kirk's team didn't win consistently in Minnesota. And Kirk had better personnel. He had a better defense. He had an established head coach who became an established OC. And they had 2 double-digit winning seasons in 6 years. I've said that over and over. This just belief that they're going to go to the playoffs because Kirk's here, I hope that's true. I just don't know that I buy into it 100%. Remind yourselves and remind friends and family that all season long when the Braves hit a home run, Braves fans score an instant round-trip or discount the next day on a set of Goodyear or Cooper tires at Tire Discounters. Again, this is the next day only. So you get that round-trip or discount, plus you get a free alignment. And you get a free oil change. There's so much value with this. With your tire purchase, the more home runs the Braves hit, the bigger the deals are at Tire Discounters. Learn more at TireDiscounters.com/Braves.
He's a Hall of Famer,
Tom,
an Atlanta legend. And again this season, he's only on one station.
And there it is, career strikeout number 1,000.
Struck him out. 7 strikeouts through 5.
And that's 300 wins for Tom Glavin.
It's the Tom Glavin Show, presented by attorney Ken Nugent. One call, that's all.
All right, the man was in the booth on TV all weekend, so he had a different perspective of the Braves winning 2-3 against Cleveland. He's kind enough to join Chuck and Chernoff for his weekly engagement on The Fan. Tommy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We are great. Let me start with Chris Sale, that on television, he just looks nasty at times, just filthy. How did it look in person? And, I mean, it looks like the Chris Sale of pre-injuries.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. First time for me, really, getting to see him live. I've seen him on TV a lot. And it's pretty nasty, you know. I mean, I said during the broadcast, I think the day after he pitched, that, it can't be a comfortable at-bat for guys, you know, going up there. And certainly doesn't have an orthodontic read. There are a lot of moving parts. He throws hard. The separation that he has between that fastball and that slider are really good. So, you know, there's a lot for a hitter to cover there, both in velocities and change of spin, so to speak. I thought he looked great. I mean, if we're able to keep him healthy all year long and have that Chris Sale going into the postseason, I feel really good about that.
Let's talk about his tag team partner when it comes to the older guys. Charlie Morton was just as good on Saturday night with his 7 innings, 6 Ks. And we've asked you about Charlie before. The fact that his stuff still looks like this at 40 and the hint of him retiring every year is there. And I've been guilty of it, just like Braves fans. I'm like, this has got to be the last year for Charlie. Like, they're going to move on. Yet here he is still giving you a bunch of good stuff for a guy who's not asked to be a top-of-the-rotation performer.
Well, absolutely. I mean, his stuff is just you know, seemingly gets better, right? I mean, I know I did read something and I chuckled that, you know, I think his velocity was down a mile an hour, and it's like, okay, you know, so what? But I feel like he's, you know, he's kind of, he kind of gets better as a pitcher every year. You know, he, I think he learns more and more how to use that breaking ball. You know, and it kind of makes the lack of velocity, which I chuckle at, less of an issue. But, you know, I feel like as he pitches, he just gets better and better.
So I'm watching Tarek Skubal pitch, and tell me if this sounds familiar. Fastball, got a change up about 8 miles per hour slower, and he tries to widen the plate. He has faced 25, 27, 20, and then yesterday against KC faced 26 batters. Is that enough for him to be Tom Glavine and take the 17 inches out?
You know, listen, I mean, I think that sometimes there's, you know, I think people have a distorted view of what separation has to be between pitches. You know, like I know for me, I'm going to say in probably my best years, my changeup was maybe a 7 to 8 mile an hour difference.
Oh my God. What happened?
Coach?
Oh no.
Sunspots?
Coach, are you there?
Okay. Everybody relax.
Acid rain?
Let's take a deep breath. Maybe his MCI card ran out.
Bankhead Tuttle?
We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Have we got him yet?
All right. We're going to get Glavine back. We're efforting. Everybody, it's fine. There's nothing to be
down.
Worried.
We're down.
No, we're not down. We're up.
He may have been overwhelmed by the complexity.
Who did you ask him about?
Tarek Skubal.
Who?
Tarek Skubal.
Who is that?
He could win the Cy Young Award this year.
Oh, I maybe you threw him off with the Skubal?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so we're going to get Glavine back, and we're going to continue the conversation about...
Well, other things, but I did because I got something about Mason Miller, too.
You know you can't ask about the Braves. Is this our elevator music? What are we waiting for?
I have a Braves question, but it's about fielding.
Okay, all right, good. That's a tease. That's not a bad tease. So we've got that in the can, so we just know we can come back to that. This is the portion of the show where now I move into the filibuster role, and nobody's calling, so we just kind of use up some clock.
He was breaking down the changeup.
We go into four quarters, and we just hope you foul us. That's what this one is, so have no fear. We're good. Everybody's back. All right, this is like the ride at Disney now. The ride will continue with Tom Glavine, with Chuck and Chartoff.
My bad. Anyway.
Glav, we'll clean it up in post. You have nothing to worry about. Where were
yeah,
you?
Perfect. I was saying that I think for me, when I was doing my thing, you know, my separation was typically 8 miles an hour, fastball changeup. I think there were times where if I wasn't feeling good physically, it might have been 10 because my fastball wasn't as good, but, you know, I think that separation is enough provided you're able to throw it where you want to and you have maintained. You have to have a hitter's respect for your fastball, and so long as you have that, then I think your off-speed stuff is that much more effective.
All right, Glav, I want to do something to tick you off, and it's not on purpose. I just know it will. So I'm looking at the league leaders in wins right now, and Tyler Glasnow is at the top, tied with Ranger Suarez, also tied with A.J. Minter. They all have 5 wins. Glasnow's thrown like 58 innings. Ranger's thrown like 53. A.J. Minter's thrown like 7 innings, and he's got 5 wins. That has to tick you starters off, doesn't it?
There's, you know, like we were talking about over the weekend, when it comes to run support for certain guys, there's always got to be that guy. And I feel like in any given bullpen, there's always that guy that comes in and gets wins, you know. And it's, I think it's more annoying when a guy comes in and blows a save or blows a hold, and then the team scores after that, and then he gets a win. But in AJ's case, that certainly hasn't been the case. He's just happened to have been the guy that's come in a tie game and pitched well and been the benefactor of the Braves scoring some runs after he's done.
All right, pitching school again, because I can't get enough of Mason Miller. A's closer, 103 with a slider, which is kind of normal. He says the reason the big change, the big improvement has come, he added a changeup. Talk about 103 and a slider, which the combination, 99 and a slider, I mean, it still is the combination. It's how you get your, you know, your saves. But then throwing a changeup, what does that do?
Well, again, I think we talk about that a lot as it relates to starting pitchers, right? You know, I think that anytime you have a guy who throws hard, like Spencer Strider, to me, is a good example. I've always felt like if Spencer was able to add an effective changeup, he'd go to another level. I think you can do that as a starter. I don't know how much you need it as a one-inning guy,
yeah.
Right? I think it's a great pitch for him if he can command it and he has the confidence in it, no question about it, because if you're trying to cover 103 and then he drops a, you know, which again I laugh at, a 90-mile-an-hour slider, I mean a changeup, that's a pretty big separation. And then you couple that with a devastating slider, yeah, that's tough. But I think the problem for a reliever in a one-inning stint is finding places to use all those pitches, right? And I say all those pitches with only three, but three pitches is a lot for a closer, you know, and I just, you know, I don't know how you get to him, but I would say that if he's got the effective fastball, the effective slider, and oh, by the way, I can do this too, almost makes him unhittable, I would think.
All right, last thing from me. I was watching this Stoney, White Sox, Steve Stone, doing color.
He watched a lot of baseball this weekend.
No, right. Hush.
Yeah. I mean, Glav, my goodness.
Yeah, he said, it's FPB, fielding practice is boring, he says, but especially for a left-handed pitcher, he says, catching the throw as you're running to first, catching the throw from the infielder, he says, hardest thing to do for a left-handed pitcher. Talk about that, because that was another thing that the White Sox screwed up this weekend.
I mean, yeah, I don't know that it's any harder than for a righty. You know, it's a hard play. You know, it looks easy. And I think, you know, let's take the Braves, for example, right? When you've got a gold glove first baseman over there who's fielding the grounders and is, you know, just feeding you a perfect toss every time, then it looks relatively easy, and it should. But, you know, all you need is a first baseman that holds on to the ball a fraction of a second too long, or a throw that it's a fraction of a second or a fraction of an inch or so out of the area that you're looking for. Where it becomes a problem is when you're having to find the baseball,
yep,
and the base at the same time, that's problematic.
So and I miss the other guy's foot.
Yeah. And it's a key. It's key that the first baseman gets you that ball as quickly as possible, so you have it in hand as you're trying to find the bag. When you're trying to do both, it's a problem.
Glav, you were in the booth all weekend, so you have a better perspective than me watching on TV. But Olsen hit a ball that I just have always seen get out. Riley hit a ball that he looked stunned that didn't get out. And I heard you guys talking about the wind. But here's where my spidey senses were raised, Glav. That looked like dead ball.
You're serious. I love it.
I mean, was the wind cranked up? Because Riley was legit shocked that his ball did not get out.
Well, we were shocked, too. I mean, he smoked that ball. I mean, he had two balls,
yeah,
this weekend that he smoked. He had that one, I think, 109 miles an hour. I think it was a Friday night, maybe, that died at the warning track. And then the other one, I think, yesterday. So, you know, yeah, I think so. And in fact, you know, our great production crew did that little breakdown where, you know, they said it would have been a home run had it not been for the wind. So, you know, I love a good conspiracy theory, and I'm not going to dismiss yours at the moment. But I think yesterday, or this weekend anyway, I think the wind played a factor. I haven't seen it blow that in from right or left field across to right field steadily like it did over this weekend. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
All right. I'll trust you. Glav, always great to talk to you, my friend. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
There's the Hall of Famer, Tom Glavin, says no dead ball. The wind did it all to stop Olsen and Riley.
I didn't watch the White Sox this weekend. That was a question from 2 weeks ago that
you
I had.
Mason Miller and
Stone. Them I watch.
You got somebody, Ruble?
No, Derek Skubal.
I will fully admit, I've told the audience, I don't watch any baseball. I watch Braves. I just don't watch any. Like, by accident, I flipped across another game during a break of a Braves game, and I felt dirty. It was like Dodgers were playing somebody.
If there's a stud going and MLB Network gives it to you.
Nah, I'm good.
I'll watch it.
I love the Braves. I don't love baseball. I just can't. Like, maybe if
don't
I gamble
like
on it.
Like a guy just rearing back and dealing, though?
I will watch 99% of an NFL game that has my teams not involved. I won't watch baseball, and I don't watch a ton of NBA. That's not the Hawks. I'm sick for watching the Hawks. Who has that
time?
There's
nothing wrong with that. Like I said, for me, it's just if Astros, I'll watch.
Yeah, you're sick.
Yordan hit two 460-foot bombs Saturday, too.
Are they 10 games under now? Are they good?
They're about 10 under.
Okay, good. All right, coming up, he checks Bill Parcells' list. Now he can check Los's list. We'll get a draft recap from Front Office Los next. Chuck and Chernoff rocking it out on this Monday afternoon post-draft. Stick with us. We will get to our grades. Player by player, round by round, all of them.
Oh, I did by team.
No, you did team. We're going to do player two.
Okay.
We have time. Do it later. We're with you till 6 tonight. Braves will go late night in Seattle with a 9:40 first pitch. You'll get the Ford leadoff show before then. You might get a little cranky Domino and McAlpin. McAlpin was stuck in an elevator all weekend. Domino's got to come back here late, so.
Oh, just so Domino.
Yeah, just be locked in tonight. Speaking of the Braves, the inaugural Braves Golf Classic is coming to the Atlanta Athletic Club, the championship course, May the 6th. It all benefits the Atlanta Braves Foundation. The four-person scramble format will feature on-course contests, prizes for the winning teams, and a unique gift for each golfer. You're going to get breakfast, lunch, and a post-round awards dinner. You'll get food, cocktails, and you will see some of your favorite former Braves legends along the way. To get involved, to grab a foursome, or for all the info, just go to braves.com/golfclassic today.
Ooh, naughty numbers.
He's the man that knows the cap, bonuses, and all of that. He's the one that gets you cut. Front office, so don't give a word. He's the guy who knows the law. Can't put him against the wall. He's the guy with all the answers. Matt and Chuck are battle dancers. Front office, no tools at
all. All brought to you by Entry Point Doors and Windows. You have some window issues. You already got the letter from the HOA. It's time to redo those windows. Well, Entry Point Doors and Windows does big projects like that, including your entryway as well. They've been doing it for over 20 years. As Window and Door Magazine's Dealer of the Year, go ahead and sign up for the free estimate, entrypointatlanta.com. Matt, let's start right here, because the discussion point when it comes to Michael Penix Jr. is something I wanted to get into from a Bill Parcells perspective and also a Cap perspective, but something that you and I did talk about a little bit earlier on in the day. When you look at Kirk Cousins' contract, he is set up for basically a two-year deal with the possibility of playing a third year. But in that third year, if you decide it's time to move on, the dead cap money would be sitting at right around $35 million. With the way the cap is moving right now, that's one of those moves that you make him a June 1st cut, and you basically split $17.5 million over 2 years. Again, not crippling to your cap if you decide to do that in 2026.
But before that, it would be them going right back to the old days of, like, we ate Matt Ryan's money, and because there's already some people believing that Penix will not sit 2 years. So a year, then they'll eat that. That doesn't seem feasible at all.
No, like, for instance, for anyone who talks about the amount of dead cap that you would have even next year, that number is still $65 million. That's a tremendous amount of cap space. That's very tough to split $35 million essentially over a span of 2 years. That's when you know you've made a giant mistake or you have a situation. That's Russell Wilson type of a situation where the Denver Broncos, almost by necessity, picking at 12, knew they had to get Bo Nix because they can't afford another quarterback, and they don't have the draft capital to go move around and get one. That's when you get kind of stuck as a franchise, when it's that kind of dead cap.
Well, so I feel like there are several conversations going on here, and none of them have been about Penix the player, because everybody seems to be fascinated, and rightly so, with the choice to get Penix after you just made the deal for Kirk Cousins. One of the great things about drafting a rookie quarterback is having the ability to spend that money elsewhere because he's playing on a cheap deal. But we go all the way through year three. Let's say that Cousins does play two. The Falcons have 25 in dead money that they could probably split up, but it's still 25 in dead money before year three, and Penix is going to be about $5 million. So they don't even get the benefit of the cheap rookie deal of a quarterback until his fourth season.
Well, I will say, here's the benefit. Because of the explosion of the salary cap, you know, if we were talking about a $60 million per year average quarterback, which is where they're going to, being that you have an average salary of about $45 million for Kirk Cousins, that pretty much puts him in like the second tier. By the time we get to 26, right around in that 27 range, because of the explosion of the cap, we're going to see $65 and $70 million quarterbacks on a yearly average. And so the fact that you're going to have what's going to be that $5 million committed to Penix, and in that year, if you just want to talk about what happens in 2026, his cap number ends up being about $57 million. There's your $62 million. That's where you're still coming in a little bit underneath. Once you get rid of him, which I believe you will after a couple of years, whether it's by performance or, you know, by injury, whatever the case may be, you're then going to reap the benefit of basically having a $20 million cap hit for a quarterback when many of the teams in the league are going to be sitting right around $60 to $70
million. I do have a fun exercise I want to try with you. Carlos Medina, Front Office Los, is with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. So everybody, and me included, talking about the process of how they're doing this. If they would have gotten the bridge quarterback, the true bridge quarterback, Russell Wilson, Gardner Minshew, any of those guys. Not sexy, but just bridge guys. And spent the money allocated to Kirk Cousins, the $100 million total over the couple of years. I mean, that's more than enough to go Legarius Sneed shopping, Danielle Hunter shopping, a safety shopping, offensive line depth. Like, they could have filled a ton of stuff. Am I exaggerating there?
No, that is you know, that is a legitimate discussion point, and that's completely valid. What I would say is this. The bridge quarterback, depending on who you select, if we had a year of Jacoby Brissett, we would be screaming about when are we going to get the first rounder in there. And I think that is what you're trying to avoid. Kirk Cousins, if healthy, allows you to give quarterbacks what they need. If I was to say there's two things I think is universal with young quarterbacks, give them time, give them a supporting cast. We saw what happened with Bryce Young. You're going to play right away, and you don't have anything around you, and oh my God, hopefully they didn't ruin that kid. You saw with C.J. Stroud, had a supporting cast. They used that. I think so much of the interest of what's going on in Chicago around Caleb Williams is there's a legitimate supporting cast around him along with protection. I think those are two of the big keys that you want, that if you're going to have that success, you can then say, all right, I'm not going to ruin this kid. I'm going to put him in a situation where he's going to be better off. And if you have Kirk Cousins, I believe you're less likely to put that young kid in before he's ready.
So I would say fair when talking about a lot of prospects. This is a 23, about to be 24-year-old, who it's different than me than J.J. McCarthy or even Drake May, that the Falcons, they've been priding themselves on bragging about their roster with the stud running back. Pitts 2 years removed from his injury. Drake London, an offensive line that they've invested a lot in. It feels like if one of the quarterbacks was going to be able to start early, wouldn't Penix fit that bill?
Yeah, he would. And let me give you just an example of when I say, like, you know, the Bill Parcells end. And this is the way Bill Parcells looked at it, where of a young guy is going to be able to come in and early on in his career have success, what does he have? And, for instance, it's all changed because the COVID year changed everything. For instance, be a senior. Be a college graduate. Michael Penix is a college graduate. He's got a degree in sports marketing and management. That's what he did. Have a three-year starter. A lot of these guys started a lot more than that. And that's the weird part about NIL and obviously the COVID year, where guys got an extra year and they got more experience. And also, it pointed out how you wanted to have a 23-game winner as a starter. Well, it didn't matter where Penix went, whether it was Indiana or Washington. He won more than that, and he would change the program. So, yeah, the die is cast. You would believe that he would have the opportunity to be successful. I just think that if you're in a scenario where we're in November and Kirk Cousins takes one of those shots that he takes like he took in Minnesota and he goes down and it's a week or two, you don't have to freak out about what you're putting back there. You might actually be excited and be able to kind of live with what's going on and know, hey, the future is going to be coming. It's just a matter of when, more than likely, probably in 2 years.
So let's talk about two things here. Number one, it also makes the Taylor Heinicke thing look a little wonky, which tells me their plan has changed, as the Falcons' plans typically change. So they redid his deal. So I think he counts $7 million against the cap. I have to look at the specific math on that, because you brought up November. If Kirk goes down, like, is it a no-brainer that Penix gets the ball if they're 7-5 and in a playoff race? Or are they going to fall into the trap of playing a veteran and not putting Penix in there?
Yeah, by the way, your Heinicke cap hit is at 4.5 because of the rework.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's quality backup money is what he is getting. I believe that given the scenario, if we're talking about this happens in September, I think it's Heinicke. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're talking about, you know, late September, early October, I think it's Heinicke. But if you're telling me it's later in the year and they're sitting right around 500 and here's where you are in the division, I think just because of the level of ability that Michael Penix has. And he's every bit of a top 10 pick. For anyone who thinks that he went early, we had the reports early on Thursday and Friday. This guy is going top 13. And you could say it's because the quarterbacks all got pushed up. You could talk about Mel Kiper having him 24th on his board. He was 30th on mine. And the only reason I put him 30th rather than maybe 2021 was because of the knee injuries and not knowing what the future of that was going to be. I think if we talk about getting later into the year and if we do have a Kirk Cousins injury, I'm playing Penix. That's going to be part. That's going to be for the next 2 years until it's fully his position.
Last one, and this is just forecasting and nothing ever really works well for the Falcons, so I'm going to twist this one around. Cousins is balling out in year two. He finishes with 34 touchdowns, 7 picks. They make a run in the playoffs. They get to the NFC title game. No-brainer. Kirk's gone no matter what, even off that kind of a season.
No, not a no-brainer. In fact, I would probably have to say that given that scenario, which when you talk about the hypotheticals, I believe they're going to be a better football team with him. And I believe they're a better football team with him in September than they are with Michael Penix as a rookie. I just believe that they're going to be more apt to compete, more apt to take advantage of their weapons. I think they're just going to be better. Last year was so frustrating to watch the quarterback play. They're going to be better. But when we build these hypotheticals, we're building it off stuff that Kirk Cousins has never done. Mm-hmm. And so that's always that part where I go like, man, you're absolutely right. If he went to an NFC title game and this is what they did, he's got one playoff win.
Oh,
he's shown that he is a quality quarterback in the regular season, and then when things get a little bit crazy, his teams have not been able to advance on a regular basis.
This would be reverse falconing, though, just to put them in that awkward position. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out. Los, always good stuff. Thank you, my friend.
See you, Matt.
All right, coming up, there's a question for Terry Fontenot that won't make anything better.
Do you trust a big butt and a smile?
But at least we'll understand it more. Maybe. We'll explain next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Camp Margaritaville RV Resort, where you can just breathe in and breathe out. Or move. There's biking, boating, arcade games, hiking, nearby golfing. Or fly through the new Fins Up Water Park. Thrills, chills, twists, and turns. This could be you. Camp Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta. Book your stay today at CampMargaritavilleLanierIslands.com.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to WadeFord.com. There, you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at WadeFord.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.